Why was circumcision such a controversial point in the early church? And why should believers even care about it today? This is Carl Kusar from Walla Walla University School of Theology. Welcome to Good Word, our weekly radio program that explores biblical and theological topics that are central to our Christian faith. Today we continue our study in Paul's letter to the Romans by looking at an issue that divided early Jews and Gentile Christians together, the issue of circumcision. To help us explore this important topic, I have two colleagues with me, Dr. Strafko Stefanovic and Dr. Bruce Johansson, who are both professors here at Walla Walla University. Gentlemen, thank you for joining me.
Nice to meet you.
You know, outside of a few recent high-profile court cases involving divorced couples fighting over the issue of whether their son should be circumcised or not, circumcision is certainly a non-issue for most people in the Western world. Yet here it is, a big controversy 2,000 years ago in the early church. What was it about circumcision that made it such a hot topic?
Well, it's basically an event that goes back in time when, according to the book of Genesis chapter 17, God told Abram that the sign of the covenant between him and his descendants will be the circumcision of all the male members of the community. Mm-hmm. And because of that, there are a number of believers, the Jewish people, the Muslims, and others who still apply that and take it very seriously. So basically, it's a religious rite.
But see, that's what confuses me, I guess, because here we have, you just said, this is a rite that goes back not to any one person, but ultimately to a command of God in Genesis chapter 17. So why is that a problem for believers? If God says it, well, let's do it. So why is this a problem for early Christians?
Well, the problem was that just like any other distinctive trait of the Hebrew people, this one too was misunderstood by a number of people, because it was an external sign of belonging to God's community, to the people
sign.
Of God, an ethnic sign. And that is why later on the prophets pointed to some of these external signs and said there is something that is even more important than the external signs, and that is the internal attitude of a person. And that is how the expression was coined by the prophets, the circumcision of the heart.
In fact, Paul quotes that, doesn't he, in chapter 2, he alludes to the same idea. So Paul's very much in tune with the prophets because it becomes a matter of the heart.
So the problem you're saying is not the sign itself, it's just that they isolated this sign and raised it to a level perhaps even higher than, well, higher than an internal response.
That's right, because in the case of Abraham, God intended that to be an external sign of an inward attitude. And once that is lacking, then the external sign isn't
nothing.
Worth much.
Right, it means nothing.
It's interesting to me that Paul takes Timothy and circumcises him because his mother was Jewess.
Yeah.
And yet he says external circumcision, you know, is not anything if the heart is not right, and that the true circumcision is of the heart. So Paul, he does give legitimacy to it as an ethnic sign. There's one more dimension that comes into this whole thing between Jews and Gentiles. And that is the whole question of clean and unclean. How would a predominantly Gentile Christian group eat the Lord's Supper with Jewish Christians? I'm wondering whether table fellowship isn't where it really became.
And we see that in Galatians chapter 2 with the story of Cephas, Peter, and Antioch, and so forth.
Yeah.
That's why it's interesting, because in Galatians, Paul can say in Galatians chapter 5, verse 12, that these Jewish believers who are insisting on circumcision as a prerequisite for really the Christian faith, Paul says, I wish those who unsettle you would emasculate themselves.
Yeah.
So he can go to these extreme kind of statements, and I think it's easy to jump on that and say, well, Paul is against circumcision. When in reality, he's not really against circumcision. He's against the way circumcision is being used.
Yeah.
Now, do we know anything from the intertestamental period that would say why Jews became so fascinated with circumcision?
Especially because of the persecution of the Jewish people by Antiochus Epiphanes, who prohibited the custom together with an antagonistic attitude toward the Sabbath keeping and, of course, the desecration of the temple in Jerusalem.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when this ritual is revived and assumes even stronger nationalistic components.
Mm. It's kind of strange because you think there's, you know, also the Sabbath was his external sign. I suppose maybe circumcision was even highlighted more because it was black and white. Either you were or you were not. I mean, Sabbath, you could debate, you know, what it means to keep the Sabbath, but it's kind of hard to debate what it means to be circumcised. Either you are or you're not circumcised. And it does seem like the Jews carried it to an extreme. In fact, I saw an interesting fact that said that they even required non-Jews living in Palestine when they were in charge to be circumcised, Jewish, Gentile men, even if they weren't Jewish.
That was to protect themselves from this clean, unclean.
Interesting.
Possibly.
Yeah, an interesting association. All right. Well, what is it? Why is faith, you think, then, if Paul's arguing that faith is really a better identifying mark than any external sign? I mean, why is it then that faith is a better mark than any external mark? Mm. What is it about faith?
Faith, you know, faith can be defined in many ways. It's got a cognitive element. But I think the way Paul uses, you know, believing mm-hmm. that. But I think the way Paul uses it predominantly, particularly in Romans and Galatians, is that faith is a relational thing. It is the opening of oneself to a relationship with God.
Mm.
And it is belief in, it is trust in. And that is a movement of the heart.
Mm.
It doesn't depend on any external symbols or emblems.
Or time or place
time
or nation.
Or anything. Yeah.
It's something that you can be identified anywhere.
Yeah.
And one more argument that Paul is using in Romans is chronological. Mm. Abraham showed his faithfulness to God. And why don't we say Abraham and Sarah?
Mm. Yes, yes.
They showed their faithfulness to God, and that is reported in chapter 12. And only in chapter 17, the rite of circumcision is introduced and mandated by God.
Mm-hmm.
But Abraham had obeyed and showed his faithfulness prior mm-hmm. to that.
Which takes us back to the beginning of Romans, the obedience of faith.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He obeyed out of faith.
Interesting. Now, this lesson focuses this week looking at Acts chapter 15, a council that took place in Jerusalem where they debated this issue of circumcision. The question was, you know, how is a person saved? And we have these Jewish believers saying that they must be circumcised and keep the law of Moses. It's a prerequisite. Without that, they really are second-class Christians. Paul argues with Barnabas that, no, that's not the case. And the council actually decides in Paul's favor. But they stipulate these four rules about Gentile believers, these four ceremonial laws. It's Acts chapter 15. We can look at verse 20, for example, where they say that they should write to these Gentile believers to abstain from things polluted by idols and from sexual immorality and from what has been strangled and from blood. Now, this seems kind of like a strange list. What's going on in this Jerusalem council? And here we have these four things listed. And sometimes people say, well, the Sabbath is not mentioned there. So that means that the Jews, the Gentile believers, wouldn't have to worry about the Sabbath or the commandments. It was only these four things. What's going on in this council?
What's interesting for me in that list, three of the things have to do with food.
Mm.
Food offered to idols.
Yes.
And, of course, that would be unkosher.
Mm-hmm.
And the way an animal is slaughtered and then blood itself, which would be polluting. And I think the other one, to abstain from fornication.
Yes.
Jews had fairly high moral standards, whereas in Greco-Roman culture, a husband could keep a concubine or whatever. The wife had to stay faithful, but many men were really quite free in terms of their sexual relations. Perhaps that was also a concern for the Jewish Christians. Those were important things that would break down fellowship.
So going back to the table of fellowship, once again, community within the early church between Jews and Gentiles together.
I think it does.
And could it be that the list has to do more with the clash between the religion professed by the disciples of Jesus and the Roman society?
Yes.
So it was not very often I talk to people and they understand this list to be a line of separation between the Hebrew faith and the new Christian faith. But actually, I believe the list here, I personally am convinced, had to do more with practical things pertaining to the Roman society and how the Christians and very often the Jews related to it.
How you interact with culture then.
Yes. Right.
Yeah. It's interesting, too. I noticed if you go to Leviticus 17, 7 through 15, chapter 18 also, it turns out that these four stipulations are actually mentioned specifically in Levitical law, and it applies not only to the Jews, but to the foreigner who was within your midst.
Gates.
Yeah, within the gates.
Yes.
So once again, we come right back to this issue of community, table fellowship, and what it means to come together as believers of different backgrounds. A fascinating passage.
Mm-hmm.
So what do we say to our those who would say that, you know, they never mentioned the Sabbath here, so surely they just said the Sabbath was not important anymore, that Gentiles didn't need to worry about it. They only highlighted these things here. Is this something against the Sabbath?
Given the fact that the Sabbath is a part of the Ten Commandments, I don't think that we should expect an intensive discussion to have been around that point.
And why not?
Well, once again, because it's a part of the Ten Commandments.
Which were accepted by both sides.
Sides and considered, you know, pretty universal in that sense, rather than limited.
So in the sense you're saying that this is it's a common assumption. This is just the moral law is not an issue.
Yeah.
Right. This is God's law. We're dealing here with maybe aspects that are ceremonial, could we say? Is that division okay to say this is ceremonial versus moral?
Yeah.
Would you agree with that?
And I believe also when it comes to circumcision, because circumcision was tied to a particular nation that God had a plan for, and the way in which circumcision was carried out, it had to do with procreation.
Mm.
So that the future children are born into the community of faith and then circumcised at an early age.
Mm.
A number of these elements clashed with what the Christians preached, and that is that the message of Christ has to be accepted by people who can make a decision between right and wrong, isn't it? Rather than procreation or small children and so on. So we have ritual of baptism assuming much more important role.
And to really make that a requirement, I think, was sending a strong message to those Gentile believers that they were second-class Christians unless they complied.
Yes.
And that was devastating, I think, to their perspective of the Christian faith. It would have destroyed the early church. They would have divided into separate fellowships, a Jewish church, a Gentile church. But Paul here is trying to keep the church together. And I think he does an amazing job. Well, gentlemen, this is certainly food for thought. I want to thank you for your input for this discussion, and also Rebecca Hannon for her technical assistance. Please join us next week as we continue to explore Paul's letter to the Romans, looking specifically Romans chapter 1, 18 through chapter 3, 20 next time. And so until then, for Good Word, I'm Carl Cosart.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.